This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Not that I need to remind you, because if you listen or watch a program like this, you already know this, but it's a dogfight in the Central, hey? Winnipeg Jets, Colorado Avalanche, Dallas Stars, all separated by 0 points. All at 93 points right now. Winnipeg Jets have a big game tonight against the New Jersey Devils as they continue to distinguish themselves in the Western Conference and the Central Division. One of our favorite topics as well. Love talking about the Winnipeg Jets and love talking to their senior host and producer, the great Sarah Orleski, who joins me now. Sarah, how are you today?
I am doing great. I love talking about the Central Division right now, too. Tell me, more exciting division than this one.
There's not, and it's an absolute dogfight here. And you know, I guess you get a chance to engage when you're in a situation like this, whether you're an Avs fan, a Stars fan, or a Jets fan. You get to engage in something that's really unique in sports, and that is hate watching. Like, I'm guessing if you're an Avalanche fan or you're a Winnipeg Jets fan, last night you're hate watching the Dallas Stars and cheering on the Arizona Coyotes. Now, I know it is a sensitive issue cheering on the Arizona Coyotes as someone who cheers for the Winnipeg Jets, given the history. But the Jets fans find themselves in a unique position last night cheering for the Arizona Coyotes over the Dallas Stars yesterday.
Oh, I'm sure. And it's exactly what you said with the division being what it is right now, regardless of what the history is and whether or not some people still have traumatic memories. Yes. from the history with Arizona. It can be a sore subject for some, but certainly everyone's watching to see for what sure. happens, and not to take away from what's going on right now. But I'm going to jump ahead for just the final road trip that the Jets have at the beginning of April. How about this one, Jeff?
Sure.
Their final road trip is Minnesota, Nashville, Dallas, Colorado.
It starts off with a potentially explosively violent affair with the Minnesota Wild.
100%. I mean, there's obviously a number of games to be played beforehand and key games, well, against Western Conference opponents. Once they get through this battle that they're out right now in the East, you've got Edmonton coming in, you've got Vegas, LA. But that final road trip has been marked on my calendar for months now, because I can't wait, especially when you look at the implications that it could have for the playoffs. So the Central Division, I expect it to come down to the very end. It's certainly, you can't help but scoreboard watch and standings watch every day now with the way that these three teams have been playing.
You know what I mean? You know what it means, Sarah? It means that there's not going to be any load management conversations around the Central. Like, no one's going to get a chance. No one's going to want to rest any. If it's going to come down to the final couple of games, like, if you're Colorado, are you going to rest, you know, MacKinnon, Rantanen, and Makar, or whomever? If you're Dallas, are you going to rest, you know, Haskinen? Is he going to sit down? Is, Robertson going to sit down? Like, I don't think so. Or if you're the Winnipeg Jets, is, you know, Mark Scheifele going to take a pause? Josh Morrissey, Sid Connor Hellebuck for a couple of games? Like, given how it is, there's no Kawhi Leonard here. There's no load management. Thank you very much. It sounds like if it stays like this, Sarah, everyone's playing full squad, full 82. Agree, disagree?
Agreed. And you're looking at it, when you look at the conference as a whole, not by division, that currently the Jets are only 1 point back of Vancouver. And so you even look that, yes, you want to win your division. You want to finish first in the West, but you look at who your wild card teams are right now, Nashville and Vegas, and you look at the heater that Nashville's obviously been on. So they're the first wild card spot. So you don't want to finish second in the West. I mean, there's so many different, this Western Conference to me right now is the Central Division is
awesome.
The most exciting. The conference is just, it's thrilling the way that it comes down to. And the final game of the season for the Winnipeg Jets against the Vancouver Canucks. Like, it's just,
it's a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing, Jeff. This could have Hollywood written all over it.
No, I know. This is outstanding, and I'm sure you're like all the rest of us who, you know, wake up every morning and play the, if the playoffs started now, and if you're a Winnipeg Jets fan, you say to yourself, uh-oh, Maybe the team is playing the best hockey right now is our first round opponent, the Nashville Predators. Maybe you might want to finish second in the Central. We've been saying all season long, no, you don't want to finish second or third. You want to finish first. You want to get one of the wild cards. Be careful what you ask for, because, you know, Andrew Burnett saying, you know, this team's not going to the Sphere to watch you two seems to have turned the entire season around. And I'm not so sure that I want Nashville in the opening round. But nonetheless, still a lot of hockey to play before we get there. So here becomes one of the questions. We've seen, and we always wish the best for Rick Bowness in his, as has been described, a minor procedure. You know, we've seen him step away before, most notably, of course, to be with his wife when she was ill, and now dealing with his own, as we understand it, minor health issue. And we've seen Scott O'Neill slide in as the head coach, and there doesn't seem to be any change at all. It's like an Olympic diver into the water. There's like not a ripple. It seems really smooth. There's no sort of harsh transition from Bowness to O'Neill. Why is that, Sarah Orleski? Why?
Well, I think that when you look at this coaches, the history obviously of Scott O'Neill and his coaching pedigree as well, he's very well suited to be able to step into. And I think many people think that, you know, his next step is going to be to return behind the bench as a permanent head coach. But the team is 10-2-2 with O'Neill behind the bench this season. You mentioned with some of the longer stretches that Rick has had to be away. But I think that the style of coaching, I mean, it's very similar all the way through, whether it be with Rick Bowness or Scott O'Neill head. And the coaching staff is so involved in all aspects of the coaching staff are involved in all areas. And so I think that it helps make that transition smoother when situations like this come up, because especially with that longer stretch earlier on in the season, you think about that adversity and how it could have started to get things off the rails and they just continue to roll through. And I think that that's a big thing, but regardless of who is behind the bench serving as head coach, everything pretty much stays the same. And Scott O'Neill is so well-liked, but within that room as well. It's just, it is a room this year, and I've covered this team since the first day that they came to Winnipeg. And this, to me, is a team, the dynamic, unlike anything that we've seen before from the top on down. And it can be so cliche to say, oh, we really are a family and we really care about each other. And it's a line that I think sometimes gets spewed out in sports, perhaps disingenuously, but you really do believe that with this group. And I think they get along so well. And just the mentality within the coaching staff stays the same. And then it trickles down and the way that the room has responded, you can't say enough good things about it.
You know, and you can always see that. And I know there's an element of, addition by subtraction here. And listen, that story is well told with the Winnipeg Jets, but you can always tell, I think, how healthy a locker room is by, or dressing room is by, how they bring in new players and how quickly they're able to adapt. And the two, of course, that are most obvious, no offense to Colin Miller here, but, you know, Sean Monahan and Tyler Toffoli, and how they've been able to join the mix and be productive right away. By the way, I love that line with Monahan, Toffoli, and Ehlers. A lot of fun to watch. But I really do think that that's always been one of the ways you judge sort of the health of a room, how when there are new players, how quickly they can be welcomed in. Like, you know, you look at what's happening with Carolina and the new players that they've brought in. Like, that's a really good room for those guys to walk in, one from Pittsburgh, one from Washington, and coming together with the Carolina Hurricanes. And I say the same thing about the Jets. Like, these are the two teams that I look at and I say, okay, like, there's no speed wobble here. There's no speed bump for Toffoli. There was no speed bump for Sean Monahan. Right away, into the mix, productive, bam. You have a thought on that one?
Yeah, well, I think it's a credit to the team dynamic. I think it's also obviously a credit to both Sean Monahan and Tyler Toffoli for the job that they've been able to do. And Toffoli in particular has had a lot of experience, which has also been, you know, well discussed in recent weeks about the different changes that he's seen in terms of the number of teams that he's been on. But he just has that ability to come in and fit in with the team. They also, both of those players coming in knowing a number of players on the team. I mean, Tyler Toffoli and Sean Monahan were roommates back in junior, never mind line mates. And Toffoli and Alex Iafallo are close. And And yeah. I think that it's a testament to the players as well, but they have just fit in so well, and they've addressed areas that the Winnipeg Jets desperately needed. And a lot of credit, my mind goes to Kevin Cheveldayoff. And over the years, I have been critical of some of the moves or lack of moves, but you look at what he has done and how the things, how everything has changed surrounding this Winnipeg Jets team. Going into this season, we had no idea what this team was going to look like. The question marks was surrounded with Mark Scheifele and Connor Hellebuyck and whether or not they would have to be traded. And now all of a sudden you look at the stability and you look at the players that he has brought in over these last two trade deadlines and the impacts that they've had last year with Namestnikov and with Nino Niederreiter, both of them re-signing with the team. Then you look at how Sean Monahan addressed that second-line center position that has been an issue for the Winnipeg Jets dating back to Paul Stastny's been the only one back in 2018 that was a good fit. Mm. Monahan's come in. He's been that fit for them. He's been able to help on the power play. Since he's been acquired in the power play, which was a sore point for this Winnipeg Jets team throughout this season, they've got the third best power sure. play dating back to beginning of February. He's been able to add stability to that second line and productivity. And then Toffoli with that right-hand shot that they need, and he just knows how to score. And he's not afraid to go to the dirty areas. He's not afraid to get physical. Yeah. He goes to the net. And you look at the way that they've been able to, fit in on and off the ice. And you never know how players are going to fit in, but the fact that mm-hmm. these two have come in particular mention and Colin Miller as well, but obviously not to the same impact, but the way that they've been able to come in and immediately fit in, but also make that impact and address the areas that the Jets need. It's been a tremendous job by the individual players, by the team as a whole, and then Kevin Cheveldayoff to be able to do it without giving up assets and being able to to bring in the right players to fit with the chemistry. Because as I said, in the past, he's tried to address different roles, and we haven't always seen the players be able to gel the same way that they appear to be right now.
Yeah. I want to ask you about your favorite two-sport athlete here in a couple of seconds, but before we get there, do you have a hot 60 seconds on Connor Hellebuyck? You know, whenever Elliot and I talk to him, he always says, look, I'm the same goaltender. It's just everything around me is different. I'm the same goalie. Nothing's changed. We talk about him with the Vezina Trophy, and he's probably going to win it this year. He says, look, it's not about me. It's about everyone around me. Sarah Orleski, do you have a hot 60 on Connor Hellebuyck?
Oh, well, look, Connor Hellebuyck is playing lights out, and I do think, obviously, front runners should win the Vezina. Let's not take away from what Lauren Bersois has done as well. The tandem, when you look at it, have the best save percentage right now combined in the NHL. So credit to Lauren Bersois as well. But Hellebuyck looks controlled, but he hasn't overall for the season, the body of work, he hasn't had to face the same types of shots that he had in previous seasons. They have been more defined defensively in front of him. They're playing with more structure, which he always says, obviously, if he's able to see the puck, he's able to act better. Sure. And I think that it's noticeable with it. They've made it a bit easier. They still rely on him at times too much, but hey, he's the goalie. That's what his job's there. Save him. But I think that you look at the control that he's playing with as well. He's very, he is very level because the line that he gives you and Elliot is the line he gives all the time. And he has since day one when he's walked in. But I think that you look at what, if he's able to see it more often than he's able to stop it. When he has had his ups and downs for it, sometimes, you know, he hasn't always, every player is going to go through it. You just know that he's going to, it's just a blip on the radar. And his back hit, his goal
for sure,
he's checked off the Vezina. His goal is the Stanley Cup. Now that's what's left on his list.
Totally understand that. I got about 30 seconds for this. I know it's not enough time, but put on your sports mom hat. Your daughter in the city championships for basketball tonight, and then volleyball in Checks Notes Calgary. Hey, sports mom.
Hey, well, you know, as a proud sports dad, you know, you spend your time in the rinks and the rinks and the baseball diamonds. I spend mine in the gym all the time. So, yeah, proud mom that spends over time, but love, and I love seeing, want to give a shout out, especially with March Madness and in particular women's sports right now, women's basketball, women's hockey, yes. What we're seeing with the PWHL. It's just, it's such a great time for female athletes, and as a mom of a young female athlete, to be able to see the coverage that we're seeing now in all different sports and the way that we're talking about female athletes, it's an exciting time, and it's something that's really important for those of us that have young female athletes, for them to have role models across the board, regardless of what sport it is that they play.
Absolutely. Girls have the right to have sports dreams just as much as the boys do. And it's great to see an environment blossoming where that's happening right now. Sarah, you're the best. Enjoy the game tonight. So Jets and the Devils will be tuned in. You be well. And good luck tonight to the city championships for your daughter.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Take care, Jeff.
There she is, Sarah Orleski. Time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. Matt Marchese, 11 games on the board tonight in the NHL. What are you thinking of?
Let's go with the Predators at the Panthers. A really fun matchup. It's Panthers minus 1.5. Nashville, 13-2 straight up in their last 15 games. They're also 8-1 straight up in their last 9 on the road. Florida, 14-4 straight up in their last 18 games. The total has gone under in 6 of the last 9 meetings between these two games in Florida, 7-2 straight up in their last 9 at home. Something's got to give, Jeff.
You know, and you wonder too, at the beginning of the season, if you said this might be a potential Stanley Cup final matchup, when everyone thought that maybe last year with the Florida Panthers was a mirage. Now we're saying, not only are the Panthers legit, but also could the Nashville Predators be the Western Conference version this season of last year's Florida Panthers? Matthew Tkachuk in there tonight for the Florida Panthers. Alexander Barkov is a game-time decision. The Nashville Predators looking for their 4th win in a row and to continue their outstanding 15-game point streak. They hold the first wild card, and they are not surrendering that at all. That is the biggest lock right now as far as wild card teams go, with all due respect, Tampa. The Panthers have lost 2 games in a row, try to pull closer to Boston for tops in the Atlantic. Boston in action tonight. With a loss, Panthers can do themselves a lot of good business tonight as they face off against the Nashville Predators. So that was Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. Next, we are talking Detroit Red Wings and offsides. Front of the blue line, back of the blue line. Ken Daniels has a great idea. He'll share that with us in a couple of seconds. Andrew Gross covering the New York Islanders for Newsday stops by as well. Big hour 2 coming up. Stick around across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Simulcast on Sportsnet 360 and wherever you get your podcasts. Merrick Show continues after this.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Quick note, this just put out a couple of seconds ago by the NHL's Department of Player Safety. Washington's Tom Wilson has been offered an in-person hearing for high-sticking Toronto's Noah Gregor. Date and time to be determined. So in person, folks, that means you can do 6 or more for Tom Wilson. It was weird. That was a bizarre play because it looked like Wilson was even surprised that he did it at that moment and then tried to sort of hold Noah Gregor after he just smacked him in the face with his stick. It seemed as if Wilson was even surprised himself that that happened. Nonetheless, in-person hearing for Tom Wilson for the high stick on Noah Gregor yesterday. Okay, in the meantime, the Detroit Red Wings have a big one tonight, and there are question marks. Are we going to see Dylan Larkin or not around that squad this evening? The New York Islanders facing off against the Detroit Red Wings. Ken Daniels is my guest, longtime play-by-play voice of the Detroit Red Wings, here to talk about the Wings, Dylan Larkin, Showtime, Pat Kane. And also, Ken, I want to start off by talking about blue lines and offside. First of all, good afternoon. Ken, how are you today?
Good, Jeff. Nice to be with you. Thank you.
Let me, so Elliot and I were talking about this in the first hour. He put it in his notes. I think you're very slowly dragging Elliot Friedman into the Ken Daniels orbit of how we determine what's offside and what's onside around the blue line. Listen, I've long been a proponent. Maybe this might just betray my love of old Roller Hockey International, just getting rid of the lines altogether. But shy of that, I'm always interested in hearing new and different ideas. You've had this one for a while now. Can you share it with our listeners slash viewers how to judge offsides? Ken Daniels, go.
Okay. Well, first of all, the way the current rule is now, you're changing the size of the offensive zone, 75 feet to 74 because of the width of the blue line. If the puck has to be all the way out to be offside, why does it have to be all the way over to be onside? You've now changed the size of the zone. Now, you're still going to have issues about possession and whether the puck was bobbling, etc. So my view is, and there are plenty of examples, and we've shown them now the past 4 or 5 years on our Red Wing broadcast on Bally Sports Detroit, where the player, as he is now, can still be ahead of the puck on the zone. You can still have a skate on the blue line or a skate in the air with the puck not there yet. My contention is, though, as soon as the puck hits the center ice edge of the blue line and at least part of a player's skate is either on the in the air on the plane or touching the blue line, the other skate can be inside as it can be now, the play is good to go. My thinking is that as soon as you see that, if you probably wouldn't even challenge it because it would be so apparent that would be onside. Mm-hmm. You're not now, okay, the player skates on the line. Let's see where it is in another split second. Let's keep toggling the tape to see when the puck's all the way over the line. You can already see it's touching the blue. If it doesn't come back out and it's still touching the blue and the player, you're good to go. It'll just be a time saver. And I think what the league is concerned about, because so many follow the National Hockey League, what does it do to those leagues behind? And I don't know, maybe even kids who follow the NHL, they'll adapt. That's a small thing. If they get to the, I don't know whether you can try this in the American Hockey League. It may be a little difficult for those coming up and down to say, well, wait a minute, but you're not really jumping. You're not really thinking about that. You're just playing. It's still about the video review. Let's cut the review out altogether in those instances where a staff may not even review it. Or if you are doing it, it'll probably take you 30 seconds. I'm not saying possession won't still be, you know, like we saw it with Draisaitl this year. There was still the question of possession. Yep. It wound up being offside. Under mine, when I freeze framed that, it was onside because he still had a skate on the line. Puck was in the air. Now you got to determine possession. I get it. It's not going to be black and white. It never is. But it would sure save a heck of a lot of time. It'll keep the zone size the same. And I think it'll lead to more goals and fewer being called back. I've seen at least 5 or 6 this year that if my suggestion were in place, the goal would stand.
Mm-hmm. Anything for less whistles, for me, I'm all in favor of. I've seen you talk about this before. I like it. My question, you know, every time I see or hear you mention this is, I always say to myself, I really hope that Ken has mentioned this to someone at the manager's level who can present this or mention this to, I don't know, Stephen Walkham. You've talked to managers about this. What's the feedback been?
This goes back to Jeff Blashill being, and maybe he was in his fourth year. This is how far back. And Blashill couldn't understand it. And I said, how do you not see this? And I'm showing him pictures. He didn't like it. I've mentioned to Stephen Walkham. I've mentioned it at the NHL broadcast meetings before to people. And I know that Ken Holland was a proponent of it. But I don't think he could get it on the agenda because I believe, I'm not have this confirmed, that the league is concerned about the standard it would set for those leagues beneath them on a change because they follow the NHL. To me, this is the NHL. Is this the first rule change the NHL has made where leagues beneath them? They're not changing the size of the net here. Others will adapt. I mean, come on, or try it in the American Hockey League. Give it a shot. It's just a time saver. We've got broadcasts. You want games in 2.5 hours to be done. Save 6 minutes.
See, I always look for, and this is why I love this. I love this because, see, I would attack this from a philosophical point of view, and I think it's the original point that you made that, at least for me, Ken, is the most salient, and that is you've changed the dimensions of the offensive zone the way you call offsides right now.
Mm.
That to me, because all of a sudden you have a different version of the offensive zone depending on where the player and the puck is. To me, in order to make it consistent, like that's where you really get me. Like that's where I sort of sit up and go, Kenny's got a great point here. They've changed the size because, just based on the
because you are about
of the offensive zone.
Because you're about the intricacies, yes, I know, with the blue line, because there's a foot there that you are. And I understand it having to come all the way out. Yeah. I get it. Leave that the same. But I just don't think it has to be all the way in. Touch the blue. You're good to go as long as the puck doesn't come out. There still will be situations, but I can almost guarantee you they'd be cut in half.
I'm warm to it. I really am. Elliot, as I mentioned, as you know, wrote about it this week. We just had a conversation about it. I hope our listeners/viewers have a good long think about this as well. You know, it is interesting, too, the way that the game now, and we always think about, you know, the law of unintended consequences, and we remember back to that Nashville Matt Duchene offside, and that's led to, you know, endless video reviews and a whole new blossoming profession. You know, Elliot and I were talking about this too. If you're someone that wants to stay in hockey in some capacity, once you age out or you play out, but you want to still play or you want to still be involved in hockey, man, video coaches are going to be so in demand right now, and the decisions they make are going to be critical and have implications worth millions of dollars for your organization. Like, it is becoming a really blossoming field here. But it is interesting the way that, like, Ken, I mean, we all grew up, you know, hearing the phrase, it's a game of inches. It's not a game of inches anymore. It's a game of pixels. And that's where we're at. And the one thing that I keep coming back to, and essentially it's philosophically the same thing, there is this standard based on pixels for zone entries, but not dump-ins at all at center. So far, we've kept, you know, the monsters away from the gate on the dump-ins. And as long as it's close enough, it's fine. And, you know, just two people yakking here on a Thursday afternoon, I always like my offsides like that. Close enough, good. You're fine. Go. Close enough was always fine for me. Was it always fine for you?
Well, it wasn't until Matt Duchene was 30 feet offside. I remember the broadcast meetings when Colin Campbell came in and we were talking about this before the review came in for the offsides. And he said to us, he said, you have no idea the can of worms you guys are opening up here. He knew it.
Yep.
But that's what they wanted, and they did it. As for center ice, I mean, coaches tell their players gap up right at center. Don't let the guy gain center to shoot it. So there is that. So many I see now, and on a change, we saw some the other night, the Red Wings were changing, and they blew it off because they made the change so it wouldn't be icing had the guy been there. And now you're determining, like Nick Lidstrom could knock every bouncing puck out of the air, right? It would never be icing. He'd knock everything down anyway. It wouldn't get there. But I'm okay with the center ice line. I don't want to go that deep, but I'm just working on the blue line first.
Neither do I.
We'll worry about center later, and then we'll worry about three-on-three, and I'm not getting into the regroup with you because that's another one that drives me crazy, but I don't know how you do that without more whistles. So I'm not going down that rabbit hole with you.
Okay. All right. Well, I was going to bring up a three-on-three, one, because it was a great goal, and two, because I just love your call of it, and that is the game against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Let's transition here and talk about the Red Wings. First of all, do we know anything definitively on Dylan Larkin right now?
Definitively, no. He ran line rushes this morning. He seemed pretty good. I think Dylan at 80% is better than no Dylan. A gut feeling tells me he'll play. But that's just a gut feeling. Nothing official. Did not speak to Dylan. He did not give me an indication, even from afar, that he was playing tonight. It wouldn't shock me if he did. It's a big game.
Okay.
And you know what, Jeff? This is honestly, Jeff. This is probably in the 7 years now of Little Caesars Arena. This is likely the biggest hockey game with as much meaning ever played outside of an opener. At Little Caesars Arena. Yeah. Tonight.
This one's massive. I mean, these are two teams. Like, I've been saying this like the last week and a half. It seemed like a cozy 5 minutes ago. We're all having these fantasies again of like what playoff hockey was going to be like with the Detroit Red Wings involved. And I always maintain, you know, teams like the Red Wings and the Rangers, et cetera, it's always better when they're involved in the postseason. It's such a fantastic hockey market. Love watching that building. I mean, you know what it's like. You're there for these games. When it's playoff atmosphere and that crowd is jazzed, and we love the Detroit Red Wings hockey fans, certainly. And then all of a sudden, it just all started to crumble. And then I wondered, okay, so they beat the Buffalo Sabres and that little winning streak, and here we go, Detroit is back. You know, the skid is over. And then it's kind of been speed wobble, and then the game against Columbus. Like, how do you, like, do you have a read on this team right now? Like, I agree with you. This is an absolutely huge game tonight between the Wings and the Islanders. But do you have a read on who this team is right now?
Not really, because obviously their shooting percentage was so good, around 12% all year, up near the top of the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
And you knew there would be some regression there. And then sure enough, that regresses a little bit in the absence of Dylan Larkin, who misses 8 games, and they go 2-6. So let's hope he can return tonight. If not, you just don't get the matchups. It means more on the road that they weren't getting the matchups, more so than at home without Dylan. That's part of the problem. And I think Alex Lyon had been overworked, and he was so spectacular early on, just like Billy Husso a year ago. Billy Husso was overworked, and now Alex Lyon got overworked. Husso's still probably a week away. You hope at some point he'll play in Grand Rapids for some conditioning and get back. But James Reimer, he's been all right lately, and Reimer will go tonight against Sorokin. It's tough to get a read. How they came out so flat against Columbus, and then Derek Lalonde was, well, after the game, how disappointed he was, and he came out and said it, and obviously let the guys have it in the first intermission. And if there's ever been a greater players coach, and the players love Derek and on their side, but boy, if he came down on him, it worked, because the last 2 periods much better. It's hard to explain, and you're coming out against an Islander team tonight that's only given up 41 first period goals, had gone 10 straight before giving up 3 to Carolina without giving up a first period goal, and you're meeting a Red Wing team tonight that starts slowly, and I don't get it. It's whether they're without Dylan and the team's just waiting. Who's going to provide the spark? Well, Kane and DeBrincat can provide it, but they need someone to get them the puck too, and that's where Dylan's so important in that way. So, yeah, it's tough to explain who they are, but I think the way they came back, throw that garbage first period, and they all knew how garbage it was, in the bin, and now maybe that's the one that starts to turn it around tonight.
This is not as intended as a slight on Pat Foley, who called a lot of great Patrick Kane moments, superb Patrick Kane moments. I was saying this in the first hour, Ken. I love hearing you call big Patrick Kane moments now with the Detroit Red Wings. And maybe part of it is just, you know, the history and its former Blackhawk and its Red Wing and that entire dynamic. I thought your call just in that overtime against Columbus was a spectacular call. But like, listen, Pat Kane delivers big moments, and you need a big announcer right there with that player to really add something to it and make it larger than life. One, it's a compliment. Great job. Love hearing you call Pat Kane great moments. And two, have you ever talked to Pat Kane about calling Pat Kane goals and Pat Kane big moments? You know there are more coming still, but what are your conversations like with Patrick Kane, and what were your conversations like when he first initially decided to go to Detroit?
Well, you know, I've known Pat for a little while, since my late son, Jamie, met him at Joe Louis Arena. It was just a couple of months before he passed. And Patrick came out of the change room at the Joe, and I'd never met Patrick before. I'd been around scrums with him, but never really met him before. And he walked out and he said, "Ken Daniels, how are you?" And I said, "Wow." I didn't really think he'd know me. And I said, "Wow." And he turned to my son, Jamie, and I introduced Jamie to him. And I took a picture of the two of them. And Taves happened to be in the background when I took it on my phone. And Jamie said, "Dad, you killed it. Look at that. You got Taves in the background, too." So Patrick turned awesome. To Jamie and he said, "Your dad's the best," which I really thought meant something. And I said, "I didn't think you'd know me." He said, "Ken, I lived at Pat Verbeek's house. You know how many Red Wing games I watched growing up?" Right, because he played at Honey Baked. And I really didn't put the two and two together because I don't assume around the league now in so many teams that any of the players know the announcers unless I was calling college games and, you know, and got to know them as they're coming up. So after he scored the goal in Chicago, of which he usurped Chris Chelios' night and became the guy on that evening, it was about a week and a half later, and I was in the room and he was there with DeBrincat and their best buddies, as you know, and their kids are together now, which is so wonderful. And Patrick came up and he said, you know what? I haven't seen you since the goal call. And I said, no, you haven't. He said, I got to tell you, I didn't watch it until I got home after the game, but that was epic. And I said, that means a lot to me. And then DeBrincat comes over and he said, more epic than that, did you see the two guys from Australia, Shepmates, imitating the call online? And Patrick said, no, I hadn't. So Kat grabs my phone and shows Patrick, and we were laughing. It's the two guys who mimic the announcers. And you had Mickey Redmond going, oh, my God. And he's running up, jumping up and down in his underwear with this guy, Shepmates. It was very funny. So we all had a good laugh. So, yeah, to your point, Patrick is just a wonderful guy. Love him. Love to watch him as a player. He's a point per game night. Game guy now. And the funniest part for me was how much he revels in scoring, because after he scored the goal in Chicago, and he's, you could read his lips, and he's saying, showtime, showtime, as he's got his arms in the air. And that's Patrick. It's not boastfully. It's just the excitement and the wonderment that he brings to the game. Same feeling I have watching Patrick Kane, honestly, that I had when Pavel Datsyuk played for Detroit. You just waited for him to come over the board so something great would happen. And more often than not, it did.
Speaking of something great will happen, I'll tell you, over the past, leading up to the game against Columbus, on the weekend, I started rewatching the Russian Five documentary, and it really warmed my heart. You mentioned Mickey there a second ago, and, you know, we saw, you know, Konstantinov there, and it's his birthday, and a great shot, and I always get the feels when I see Konstantinov. He was one of my favorites. Man, was he such a raw bone, rugged, tough defender, and hearing Mickey, you know, bad to the bone, like, it was such a perfect, beautiful moment. And I love that, you know, Konstantinov is still very much a part of the Detroit Red Wings. Do you have a couple of words about him, Ken?
Well, Vladdy was before my time. I came actually to Detroit the season of the limo accident. So the Red Wings had won their first of consecutive cups in 97, and I came 97, 98. So I only saw Vladdy from afar. And then when I met him, introduced to him a few times, and he really didn't know who I was. But after a while, he did, and he would recognize me. And I just hear stories from Mickey and how funny he was, and around Christmas time, and singing the Christmas songs. And I just think back to how many Norris trophies, even with Nick Lidstrom there, would Vladimir Konstantinov have been in the conversation for? And then you think in those years where the Red Wings lost Vladdy and then lost Yuri Fisher, and what a force Yuri Fisher could have been at such a young age with that heart incident on the bench and the defibrillator. And they had to bring that out. And our doctor, Tony Colucci, saved Yuri Fisher's life, who's still with our organization. But think about that. They gave up two first-round picks to go get Chris Chelios from Chicago, which turned out okay. Hawks didn't do much with the picks. But still, that was to replace Vladdy, and then without Yuri Fisher, think what that D could have been. Vladdy and Fisher and Lidstrom, et cetera, and Rafalski and all the guys that they had, and I'm missing out many, and Larry Murphy, who came on to play with Nick and for those years. So wonderful. And Vladdy, just to see him in the building, and he's there quite a few times during the season, but the crowd just always goes crazy when we show Vladdy, and it was wonderful to see him, especially there on his birthday.
Just love it. Before I wrap up, what do you expect tonight? What does this one look, feel, and sound like in your head before the game tonight, Ken?
Well, I know you guys were talking earlier, by the way, about the Sider running a little interference on the Kane goal. All we'll say is, and Chris Osgood, who does a great job with Mickey in the postgame, Chris picked it up postgame, and he said, and if you look at it again, Johnny Gaudreau could have taken a different route. He could have gone to his right. There was no way going to his left. And Sider stopped. Yes, a little nudge with the shoulder, yes. But there was no way Gaudreau, watch it again, going to his left, was going to catch Patrick Kane. He took the wrong road there, Super Tramp. He could have gone to his right, for all the Columbus fans that are arguing. He would have had a better lane to the net. But he didn't. He took the long way home, is what he did.
The thing that I marvel at is, and you know this, you were right there for it, I would always marvel at, you know, the Babcock-led Detroit Red Wings. skating picks, casual picks. They weren't full-on Karl Malone stop you in your tracks, but the Red Wings were the best at just getting enough, just a little shade, just to free up a little bit of ice for, you mentioned Pavel Datsyuk or Zetterberg or whomever. They were the masters of it. And when I saw that the other night against Columbus, I had that soap and warm water feeling about that era Detroit Red Wings. I'm like, ooh, that's from that last era of Detroit Red Wings. So I kind of had a sideways smile on my face. I know Blue Jackets fans are hot about it. It wasn't as obvious as we saw in the San Jose Ranger game a couple of months ago with Jan Ruda, but it was just enough there to make me go, oh yeah, that was that version of the Detroit Red Wings.
Okay, let's wait till the end of the season and where they finish in the lottery and they lost a point there and that point gets them the first overall for Celebrini, okay? Just like Chicago winning the game last year in Pittsburgh, right? Thinking that's going to screw us. They wind up third and they get Bedard. Yep. So let's see where all that winds up. But to your earlier point, we'll just finish with this, the thought on tonight. James Reimer against Sorokin. I hope Reimer comes up big. I hope Dylan Larkin's able to come back. We don't know that yet. It's true. Is a game time decision, but if he can, I think this will give the team a lift, but they need to start well. And again, in what we think is the biggest hockey game to be played with the most meaning. I know four pointers, they don't award four points, but this is as close as you get. And then you got to keep track of the Washington Capitals too. So we'll see.
Awesome. Always full value, whether it's Blue Lines or the Red Wings or Konstantinov or Mo Sider, shading, picking, however you want to call it. Thanks as always for stopping by, Ken. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff. Always my pleasure. Thank you.
Ken Daniels, longtime play-by-play voice of the Detroit Red Wings. And that's an interesting point. If you look at the history of this rink, where I think a lot of people, most notably, of course, Detroit Red Wings fans, were all dying to see playoff hockey in and see that rabid Detroit Red Wings crowd react to playoff hockey. And this is probably the most important game. You know, it was before the trade deadline last year, those two games against the Ottawa Senators, where the Detroit Red Wings threw in the towel. And Steve Yzerman said, there's no there. This year, we're throwing it in and we're making our trades, running it back this season after the additions in the offseason. And I kept telling people, even though it feels like the Detroit Red Wings are falling out of this thing, that the Detroit Red Wings are, losing and losing that spot, they're still not out of it. Now, they dodged a big one yesterday, right? They dodged a major bullet yesterday. The Washington Capitals could have, leapfrogged them again with a victory over the Toronto Maple Leafs. Unfortunately for the Washington Capitals, and to the benefit of the Detroit Red Wings, the Maple Leafs, certainly with Austin Matthews and his 5 points, beating the Washington Capitals by a final score of 7-3. So, even though the Washington Capitals have a game in hand, and I'm not one of these people that just awards victories for games in hand, still, they have the potential to get leapfrogged again by the Washington Capitals, who still, as we pointed out yesterday, have a really tough road down the stretch. They have, when you look at strength of schedule, I think it's fourth worst in the NHL, like right in there with Boston, who has a tough one, Montreal, who has a tough one. But for teams battling for a playoff spot, the Washington Capitals, when you look at who they're facing off against down the stretch here, they have a really tough sked. But the Detroit Red Wings are still very much in this thing, even though at times it has felt like they're not. And the New York Islanders are still chasing. Now, with the Islanders and the Washington Capitals, you do wonder whether it is that final wild card spot that they are indeed chasing, or maybe third in the Metropolitan Division. And that makes every decision that John Tortorella and the Philadelphia Flyers make of primary importance for teams like the New York Islanders and the Washington Capitals, who are chasing. And that's why we wonder about this Sean Couturier decision tonight before the Philadelphia Flyers face off against the Carolina Hurricanes. Now, Elliot, if you heard him in the first hour, pause, sips coffee. If you heard Elliot in the first hour, he's got someone texting him who would know John Tortorella well, is saying, hold on here. Even though it may seem like Sean Couturier will be health bombed again for a second game in a row, he's done things like this before. Don't be surprised if this is a head fake. Don't be surprised if this is a toe drag. And maybe at the end of it, tonight, we find out that Sean Couturier is in for the Philadelphia Flyers. We shall see. It's never a dull moment around John Tortorella. And as we've seen around this organization, whether it's John Tortorella, Daniel Briere, Keith Jones, or Dan Hilferty, it's never a dull moment around the entire Philadelphia Flyers organization. But getting back to the original point, this one is massive. You know, with a win tonight in regulation, the Detroit Red Wings jump to 78 points and keep the Islanders at 73, Islanders with a single game in hand. And you wonder, given how tough it is right now to pick up any points whatsoever, if that could be the final nail. And this is an Islanders team that is in disarray. This is an Islanders team that can't stop losing. And this is an Islanders team that can't score at all. This is one that, you know, with the Lou Lamoriello team, the premium is going to be on defense. I get it. But this is taking it to the extreme. This is a team that can't find the back of the net. This is a team where big-name players are not showing up for big-name games. And that infuriates one of the best big-game players of all time, who happens to be the head coach of the New York Islanders, and that is Patrick Waugh. That is not resting well with Patrick Waugh. This stretch of losing by the Islanders, where they've fallen out of what we once thought was a lock in the playoff spot, is not sitting well with Patrick Waugh. I'm with Mickey on this one. A, this one's huge for the Red Wings and that rink, and B, it's enormous for the Islanders. They win in regulation. All of a sudden, that gap is a single point. And all of a sudden, we're talking about maybe, just maybe, can the New York Islanders, with one of the goofiest looking records in the NHL, 29-24-15, the goal differential of -23, with a win tonight, do we say the Islanders are back in this thing? One of 11 games on the board around the NHL this evening. We will be tuned in to see what happens here. We're going to get on the Islanders page here in a couple of seconds. And as I mentioned off the top of the show, the obvious question is, what's up with the Islanders? Andrew Gross covers the Islanders for Newsday.com. He stops by to share his expertise and his thoughts on what we're seeing from the Patrick Waugh-led team. Doesn't feel or look or sound like a Patrick Waugh team whatsoever. Because as we talked to Elliot last week, when you look at big game performers in the history of the game itself, maybe outside of 1998 in Nagano, but that really wasn't the goaltender's issue now, was it? Patrick Waugh is one of the biggest big game players the game has ever seen. And you can't accuse the Islanders of that right now. Andrew Gross on the Merrick Show in a couple of moments, across the Sportsnet Radio Network simulcast on Sportsnet 360 and wherever you get your podcasts. Back in a moment.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
11 games on the go around the NHL this evening. Welcome back to the program. One thing I should have noted earlier, tonight the NHL debut of a former Vegas first-round pick. I shouldn't say former. Vegas first-round pick. Zach Dean, who was part of the Ivan Barbashev trade last year, makes his debut for the St. Louis Blues tonight in Ottawa against the Senators. Particularly salient because Zach Dean played his junior hockey in Gatineau, which is right across the border from Ottawa into Quebec. 21 years old, 13 points in 47 games. Born in Alberta, family moved to Newfoundland, played his junior hockey, as I mentioned, in Gatineau, playing on a line, we suspect, with Lexi Toropchenko and Nathan Walker. There will be plenty of family and friends there today, as we like to say in the business. He's playing hockey for free tonight, having to buy as many seats as he can for all the family and friends that will be in attendance tonight as the St. Louis Blues face off against the Ottawa Senators. But one of the biggies we've got our eyes on tonight, and Ken Daniels moments ago, Red Wings play-by-play voice, said it is the biggest game in the albeit brief history of this, albeit not really, new arena. Little Caesars. It is the Detroit Red Wings facing off against the New York Islanders. Andrew Gross joins me now, who covers the Islanders for Newsday. Andrew, how are you today? Thanks so much for doing this. And I guess I mentioned this off the top of the show today. The one question, and maybe this is the overriding umbrella question that I have for this entire interview, and that is this. What is up with the New York Islanders? Can you please explain this recent phenomenon? Andrew Gross, what is up with the Islanders? What is this?
Hey, Jeff, thanks for having me. Yeah, no, look, they reeled off a six-game winning streak, and part of that was a 5-3 win here in Detroit on February 29th, and that snapped the Red Wings' six-game winning streak. And now the Islanders are coming in on a five-game losing streak. They look disorganized and dysfunctional defensively. The word that keeps going through the room is they need to play connected hockey. And by that, you know, Patrick Waugh was so he emphasizes five-man units so much, and they were doing that so well during the winning streak. And now they can't break the puck out. They can't transport it through the neutral zone. The other team is possessing the puck almost at a 2-to-1 ratio. It seems like everything has just fallen apart, and it's been really, really surprising because they were playing well through that win streak. Although, look, the last two games of that win streak, I'm not trying to be disrespectful to any player in this league, but the last two wins were against the Sharks and the Ducks, and those are two of the more terrible teams in the NHL right now. And maybe that masks some of the issues, because those were 7-2 and 6-1 games, and then when it got tougher and they went to L.A., they lose 3-0, and then I don't think they were – I'm not trying to make an excuse. That road trip was a weird road trip because you had all this time out in California and then rather coming home, which is normally what teams do coming back from California, the Islanders wound up spending a couple extra days in Buffalo, including a day off in Buffalo, of all places, right? Mm-hmm. And they just looked they looked like they had no legs and no desire to be in Buffalo. They lost 4-0 to the Sabres, who, by the way, are also on the fringe of this, you know, who wants it the least Eastern Conference playoff race for the second wild card spot. I mean, the Islanders, they should be, in my opinion, I think the Islanders and the Red Wings are the best amongst this group of six or seven teams that are really competing for a playoff spot here. But one of them has to step up and show it. The Red Wings are coming in at 2-8-0 since they played the Islanders. And, one of these teams is going to make the playoffs, and there might be an argument that, you know, none of them deserve to make the playoffs at this point. It's funny. You mentioned this being the biggest game. Patrick Waugh was asked about that before the game, and he just started laughing. He goes, I'm laughing because before every game I've coached with the Islanders, someone has asked me about, is this the biggest game? You know?
Well, I think the main point there, and first of all, I think your point about nobody seems to want this thing is certainly correct. It seems as if right now, and we'll see if any team wants to grab this, you know, grab the ball and go run and hide and grab the playoff spot. It seems like whoever gets this is going to get it by marching backwards. Like nobody wants to go headstrong, you know, bite down on your mouth guard and grab this thing. This is the backwards march to a wild card spot. But I think to the point about it being the most important game here for that rink and for, you know, certainly for the Detroit Red Wings is, you know, they haven't been this close to a playoff spot this deep into the season going back to when this rink was built. And, last year it was going good for the Detroit Red Wings. And then all of a sudden those back-to-back losses against the Ottawa Senators. And Yzerman said, okay, it's not there for us this year. We're going to move assets. We'll start with you, Tyler Bertuzzi. You're off to the Boston Bruins, et cetera. It's just that this deep into this season, like we haven't seen a game of this magnitude with this importance in Detroit since the rink was built. I think that's where that one comes from.
Yeah.
But to Patrick Waugh's point, yeah, they all seem like huge games. And I'm glad you mentioned that Buffalo loss, because in this entire string, and I know that Patrick said that we threw away the game against the Ottawa Senators, and he's right. But to me, the one that seemed like the most punishing and crippling is the one that you isolated, and that's the Buffalo Sabres. And that's the second shutout in two games. You got blanked by the Kings, as you mentioned, then blanked by the Buffalo Sabres. That was the one where it seemed like the whole team was as far away from the game as possible. Is that the one that you would pull out in this entire mess and say that's the one that really should give the team the most cause for concern?
Yes, I would say, like I said, there were just no legs in that game. It was, you know, it was a foregone conclusion, and you're thinking, come on, you know, if you want to make the playoffs, you got to go into Buffalo and give a good showing, you know, because you can put the Sabres away and give yourself a little breathing room. I would say it was that game, and also that 5-2 loss at Madison Square Garden against the Rangers, where the Islanders looked so far away from being a playoff contender in that game. They never touched the puck against the Rangers, who, you know, looked every bit like a Metropolitan division leader and a team that could possibly be the number one seed in the East. And yet, you know, the thing I take away from that game was, as bad as the Islanders played, they were still 2-2 in the second period. And you're thinking, okay, you know, they're gonna maybe get over the hump here and you know, maybe steal 2 points or get this to overtime, steal a point in a game they have no business getting anything. And that third period came, and the Rangers put it in a different gear, and it was like the Islanders' transmission dropped out of the engine. I mean, they could not keep up in the third period, and that was really. That was kind of eye-opening to me, you know, just, you know, what's going on here? Why is this team? And it had everything to do with, you know, what I just talked about, being connected. You know, there were defensemen staring at each other. You could almost hear them saying, I thought you were supposed to be there. Me? No, I thought you were supposed to. You know, I thought that was your guy, you know? Yeah. It just looks so disorganized. And I you know, including tonight, there are 14 games left. And so there is time to turn this around. And, you know, we've just, you know, within the past 2 weeks, we've seen the Islanders rip off 6 wins in a row. So, you know, it's kind of in there. But look, Patrick Waugh is shuffling the lines again tonight. I think the most significant thing he's doing is he's taking Matthew Barzal off the wing and he's putting him back at center. And, you know, he's played shifts, Matthew Barzal, and we all know what a good skater and a natural centerman Matthew Barzal is. But since the Islanders acquired Bo Horvat, which was January 30th of last season, and then Barzal got hurt real quickly after that, but he was playing on Horvat's right wing. This is, I believe this is the first game that Barzal has started at center since they brought in Bo Horvat. And, you know, that is not insignificant to me. He's going to be centering the second line with Anders Lee and Hudson Fashing, who, you know, may not be a top six player, but he'll bring a little bit of that speed with Barzal, and probably, you know, him and Lee can go into the corners and muck it out and maybe, you know, retrieve a few pucks for Barzal to, you know, skate around and maybe snap off a goal or two.
Let me, that's a really good analysis, by the way, Andrew. Let me ask your opinion philosophically here. Lou Lamoriello at trade deadline, keeping the powder dry. Mm. Now, there's a couple of ways you can look at this thing. One, you can say that's a shot in the arm for the team because, damn it, our general manager believes in us.
Right.
And the flip side of that, you can say, you know what? Our general manager doesn't have any faith in us. He didn't do anything at deadline to help us. He doesn't think we deserve a trade. What is a prevailing sentiment or feeling in and around the team about Lou Lamoriello and deadline this year. Which one is it? Is it he believes in us or he doesn't believe in us by way of what he did at deadline, or rather didn't do?
It was much more of the former. Look, you know, Lou keeps talking about the faith he has in the core group here. And, you know, what else is he going to say? He's got everyone signed, you know, for 17 years from the state going forward. But no, you know, jokes aside, no, he believes in this group. And the players in that room, you know, they still have a very strong belief in themselves. And look, you know, they're going to say whatever is, you know, the most politically correct thing anyway. You know, last year when he went out and got Bo Horvat, it was like, oh, my God, look how much Lou believes in us. And this year he doesn't make a deal. And it's like, oh, my God, look how much Lou believes in us. Right? But I really do think the way they looked at it, and like, you know, obviously we're not seeing exactly what trade talks Lou was, you know, in on and what was presented to him. So we only have to take him at his word that he thought the prices were way too high and it was going to wind up being a bunch of lateral moves rather than moves that really pushed the team forward. That's, you know, that's what Lou said to the media. And, you know, taking it face value, if that was the case, then the way the Islanders looked at it was, okay, we're not making any trades, but we're getting some defense depth because Robert Bortuzzo is eventually going to come back from this ankle injury. And by the way, Bortuzzo is in the lineup tonight. It's his first game since January 2nd. So, you know, the Islanders are looking at, well, we're getting some defense depth. And now, obviously, they need it because Scotty Mayfield has gotten hurt, and it seems really doubtful that he would be back, you know, at least in the regular season, according to the timeline. So Bortuzzo, you can look at him as, you know, acquiring him for a second time this season, right? Up front, they've called up Johnny McLean's son, Kyle McLean, and he's proven to be a really nice addition on the fourth line. He's almost a rarity. He's a young kid. I think he's 24, who knows exactly who he is and what he needs to be in the NHL. He's not a 24-year-old going, okay, I'm going to serve my apprenticeship on the fourth line, but I'm a second-line player. I'm a top six forward. Right. He knows exactly what. And that's kind of rare, you know, more and more in the NHL, where everyone wants to be this skilled skater who's going to be in the, you know, unless you're Matt Rempe, right? You know, you're kind of always saying, I could play in the top six, you know. So so Kyle, and he's got three goals. He has a little bit of he's got a little bit of his dad's shooting ability, although he's never going to be the scorer his dad is. But his dad says Kyle is, like, you know, two or three times the skater that he ever was. So I think they looked at that as, you know, here's another, you know, a forward depth acquisition we've made. We've got Kyle McLean in the lineup, and, you know, Hudson Fashion was a healthy scratch. Now he's back in the lineup. They're sitting Matt Martin tonight just because Patrick said it's a speed thing. They need as much speed as they can get against the Red Wings. It's a bit of a tough scratch because Matt Martin is from right across the river in Windsor. He always gets a bunch of family coming out to these games, but you can't be sentimental about this stuff. So to get to your point, I think the Islanders looked at it as we have options within the organization that will help us as much as anything we could acquire at the trade deadline.
You know, the interesting point about that is the exact same logic I'm told that Steve Yzerman employed around deadline as well. Like the synergies between how Lou Lamoriello felt and how Yzerman felt, A, price is too high, and the players that we're looking to bring in are players that we already have in the organization. Like, this is going to be a fascinating game. Like, I'm very much looking forward to this one. It's the Islanders facing off against the Detroit Red Wings. I've got about 30 seconds, not enough time to give a thorough answer. I apologize. But, you know, my producer, David Siss, was wondering about this one. You're there for all the games. You're there for all the practices, all of it. Who's been their MVP? Is there one player you can look at and say, that's been the Islanders' MVP going away?
You know, the knee-jerk reaction would be Ilya Sorokin, but Ilya has been a little bit too up and down of late.
Yep.
So I would say Noah Dobson is probably the leading candidate this season. He's putting together. He's going to get some votes for the Norris Trophy. Probably, you know, third, fourth place votes, but you might see him, you know, finish in the top five in the voting. He's been really good. And the other candidate would have to be Bo Horvat, who's really, he more often than not, you know, either it's either him or Brock Nelson driving the bus offensively with Noah Dobson. So I would probably say Noah Dobson tops the list amongst the team.
Excellent stuff as always. Looking forward to this one. One of 11 games on the board around the NHL. It is the Islanders in Detroit to face off against the Red Wings. Humongous, as we all know. Wildcard ramifications attached to this one. Andrew, always a pleasure. Thanks for sharing your expertise and spending a lot of time with me today. Much appreciated. Enjoy the game tonight.
Thanks, Jeff. Always great talking to you. Hopefully we get some more time later in the season.
Fingers crossed. Always a lot of good stories coming out of the Islanders organization. Andrew, thanks as always for stopping by. Andrew covers the Islanders, as we all know, for Newsday and Newsday.com. So 11 games tonight. That's a biggie. I mean, Detroit can really start to pull away, certainly from the Islanders with a regulation win, but a regulation loss for the Red Wings, a regulation win for the Islanders brings that margin to 1. The problem is, with the Islanders, you know, one of the glaring issues here is the tiebreaker. So it's not as if the Islanders can tie the Detroit Red Wings or whomever is going to be in that second wild card spot and secure a wild card position. They have to be at least 1 point better than whomever they're competing with, because when you look at the regulation wins, the Detroit Red Wings right now with 24, the Capitals with 27, Buffalo Sabres with 27. If you're believing in the New Jersey Devils, they're at 28. The New York Islanders with 21. Folks, they got to win outright because they don't have a tiebreaker at all. They got to win. Thanks to Andrew Gross for stopping by. Andrew from Newsday. Thanks to Ken Daniels, who shared expertise on a couple of different things. One, the Detroit Red Wings and Patrick Kane, and great reminiscing about Vladdy Konstantinov as well, and also his thoughts on how offsides should be adjudicated. Thanks to Ken Daniels for stopping by. Thanks to the great Sarah Orleski for stopping by to talk about the Winnipeg Jets' big game tonight against the New Jersey Devils, and the returning from Florida, only to complain about the weather, the one and only Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. Thanks to everyone who put this thing together. Austin Mackey on the board, David Siss and Matt Marchese are producers, and General Nick trying to make me look presentable for television. As always, mistakes all made by me, not the people that I just noted. Show returns tomorrow across the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcasts. Talk to you in 22 hours.